we did the work in the pre-computer age, so it was all by hand. And that meant there were no laptops, no software, nothing to really make this usable into the future in the way that it could be used today. The three reasons why I think it needs to be updated is, one is time. With the 50-year rule, we didn't look at any, since we did this in the early 80s, anything after 1930. So that meant we didn't consider buildings that reflected the international style, modern style, mid-century modern, all of those structures that were created after 1930. Secondly, as a matter of geography, when we did that survey, of course, East County was still unincorporated. So anything between Gresham and 90th, roughly, was not looked at. And of course, that's the hotbed of mid-century modern out there. So it definitely needs to be inventoried to get the city structures and buildings treated as a whole. And then thirdly, there's the matter of subject approach that we used. In the early 30s, there wasn't a lot of research material available on women and ethnic and racial minorities. Now we have a lot more data to look at so that we can associate buildings and structures with appropriate, significant individuals in those categories. So that alone probably necessitates a reevaluation to get at the issue of significance. Once you've got the inventory, then you can look at what are the most important items within that inventory that need to be saved. And you can't do that unless you know the size of the universe. So I would say those are basically the reasons that needs to be updated, and I can answer any questions you might have.
Very good. I appreciate that. Thank you. Perfect timing as well. Great. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Linda Nedekoven. Thank you for letting me testify on this. I certainly second the comments of my previous testifiers, and I'm very supportive and excited about the content of this report, and especially the strategies outlined. I also want to ask for a more comprehensive focus on the historic fabric along the commercial corridors. It's rapidly disappearing. And as you know, the HRI update would help with that. That's obviously hopefully in the works. And the unreinforced masonry concerns. I'm the liaison to the Hawthorne Boulevard Business Association from hand, and of course, those folks have already identified 40 structures that would be likely to lose perhaps all value given the current situation. Many of the things I was going to say you've already discussed among yourselves already, which is very reassuring to me, one of them being the incentives, and I certainly support the idea of, you know, continuing to house an arts group, but I'm wondering if that same strategy couldn't be used to create or keep affordable housing in those unreinforced masonry structures, if a covenant couldn't be made in some cases where, you know, there would be a certain level of rent for X number of years in return for some subsidy or revolving loan for the seismic reinforcement, because I'm obviously aware of the financial trade-offs. I appreciate the comments on advocacy. I get concerned about the way things move through the legislature. Sometimes you don't realize that a particular bill is going to have historic impacts. And so some way that, again, the expertise that we have here can, you know, find a way to weigh in on those. My final plea is that, as you've just mentioned, you have several tracks going. I've been doing the splits, trying to straddle the RIP discussions and try to get my neighborhood supplied with information from all sides. If there's some way that you can do some further kind of convening, I testified on the budget trying to preserve some maintenance for Ladd's Addition Gardens. People were fine to me. The following week when people from Ladd's testified at the budget hearing, they were booed. And that's just not fair. And there needs to be some way that we can do some bridge building, some better understanding of, you know, what's going on here between the need for affordable housing and the need for some kind of preservation. And if there's anything I can do to help, I will. But somehow there needs to be some higher level of leadership convening this. I don't know what the answer is, but we're so badly split, we're getting in our own way. So thank you.
Thanks, Linda. Appreciate it. Thanks, all three of you. Next three, please.
Are Peggy Moretti, Wendy Rom, and Jackie on Northeast Mason Street.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Peggy, congratulations. I see the carousel made the report.
Yes. You know, it isn't all bad news out there. Shall I start?
Please.
Okay. I'm Peggy Moretti. I'm the executive director of Restore Oregon, and I'm here to enthusiastically endorse the State of the City Preservation Report as submitted by the Historic Landmarks Commission. And today I wanted just to provide a little expansion on a couple of the issues noted in the report and add maybe a couple of additional remarks of other thoughts for your consideration. So my points include the fact that Portland is in fact faced with the competing demands of accommodating growth through increased density while also retaining our character-defining historic fabric. It is for that very reason, as everybody has been saying, that we really have never had a more critical need to take inventory of our historic assets. We simply cannot make good choices about what to keep and what to let go if we don't know what we've got. So I'll just say that again, reiterating what others are noting. A brief point on the residential infill project. I think there's good stuff in there. It's not fully baked, in my opinion. We'd like to see better incentives to retain existing housing, most of which is our more affordable housing. And we'd like to see additional provisions that ensure the compatibility of infill development and so forth. I'd really like to ask the city to use its state lobbying muscle to address Oregon's profound lack of financial incentives for historic rehabilitation and reuse. As you may be aware, right now in Washington, the tax overhaul that's proposed would eliminate the federal historic tax credit. And that would mean projects like the PNCA conversion of the old post office federal building would never happen. The Armory Theater that we all enjoy and love would never happen. The Erickson Fritz or the Branagh Apartments we've been talking about, low-income housing projects, would never happen without that. And that looming loss makes it even more important that Oregon ought to have a state historic tax credit, which Restore Oregon's been advocating for some time. So I really want to make sure that that remains on our legislative agenda, and perhaps a different iteration of that and an additional way to tackle the issues of seismic retrofitting. I would like to suggest that we ought to have a state seismic tax credit. The city can't do this all by ourselves. This is a state issue, not just a city issue. If we made that a priority on the legislative agenda, I think that would be an extremely smart thing to do. It would benefit both preservation and public safety. A huge portion of preservation costs are seismic retrofitting. And we really can't expect property taxes to carry the burden for everything we want to get done here. We have a small property tax proposal to offset some seismic costs. It is not going to do the job. I served on the seismic committee, so I know that I know what we're trying to accomplish there. But I think that many other cities across the state would join with Portland on that kind of an initiative, and there would be a huge economic upside, actually, to doing that. I think we've made some comments about preservation and affordability not being in conflict. We absolutely support additional density, the addition of middle housing in older and historic districts, ADUs, internal conversions. There are answers out there, and it's a false proposition that these good ideas don't need to be in conflict at all. And then there's one final thing. I know I'm slightly over time, but I think there's one thing that would also benefit Portland greatly that was not in the landmarks remarks. We need a demolition by neglect ordinance in this town. Many cities, including Salem, use this mechanism to help ensure public safety and prevent the loss of historic resources. If one had been in place in Portland, we might not have experienced the outrageous loss of the Workman Temple building, which, by the way, could have been used for affordable housing, despite what the claim of the developer was. And we wouldn't have buildings like the Wong Laundry Building, a very important cultural building in Chinatown. That would not be on Restore Oregon's most endangered places list if we'd had a demolition by neglect ordinance. So it seems to me there ought to be meaningful penalties for property owners who let their buildings go to ruin and then impose blight on their neighbors and then claim they have no option but demolition. So that's a really practical step we could be taking. And I just want to comment that I hope next year at this time we are all celebrating that we have found a new home for the Jansen Beach Carousel. So anything you can do to help us find that new home is much appreciated. And thank you for all your hard work. I know we are dealing with many conflicting challenges, but we need to maintain our humor and get at it.
Thanks for your testimony.
Peggy, can I just make one comment? You've made an eloquent case for a new statewide tax credit. Mm-hmm. Can I just offer a cautionary flag and something maybe you can raise with Senator Burdick? Our experience is the legislature sets an amount of foregone revenue that they're willing to budget, and then they score them. They score all these things, and it's almost like a zero-sum game.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a little bit over here, but it'll come at the expense of the film and tax credit or something
yeah.
else. And I think you and I would agree that not all these tax credits are the same.
Yep.
And they actually shouldn't be put into one basket and then scored. But the one cautionary flag is that's how the legislature views it. And they set an amount of money. They compare them against each other, and then we may be working across purposes on some other tool that we need.
Right, right.
So just food for thought.
Well, I'd like to think that they listen also to the mayors and city councils, and we have an awful lot of folks, I think, not just Portland, though, that really would appreciate this, the need for this. So.
Right. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Wendy Rahm, board member of the Bosco Milligan Foundation and a West End resident. First, I'd like to thank the council for adopting the robust historic preservation policies in the 2035 comp plan. Thank you very much. And I'm happy to be here to support all the goals and policies and recommendations contained in this report. I'm particularly appreciative of the inclusion of the West End neighborhood in the Portland Historic Watch List. I agree that the West End and the other areas on this list merit extra efforts both to raise awareness and to give better ways to improve our stewardship of these irreplaceable resources that give Portland its character. Among the many solid recommendations in this report, I'd like to highlight a few. I urge the council to look for funding to support and update the 1984 HRI, just like a lot of other people in the room. The Landmark Commission, I gather, is requesting an additional BPS staff member and seed funding. This is a critical first step, in my view. Second, I urge the council to support the Historic Resource Code Project, which will help us all make better decisions in the long run. Third, crafting solutions for property owners to undertake the necessary seismic upgrades and to encourage rehabilitation rather than demolition will be crucial to saving our heritage. One such solution is to support the state rehabilitation tax credits. I appreciate that comment from Commissioner Fritz. As the report recommends, targeting more modest resources and more modest neighborhoods can minimize displacement of vulnerable communities. One such area is, surprisingly, the West End, densely populated with affordable housing today. Affordable housing and historic preservation should proceed hand in hand. Finally, the Landmark Commission is, I gather, hindered in accomplishing its mission by not being able to advocate on behalf of the city historic resources without some complications. Allowing the Landmark Commissioners this ability will not only empower them to educate the public more effectively about the value of these resources, it will also allow them to testify in a timely manner in support of Portland's policies and regulations. Timely advocating should not be impaired. So I urge the council to adopt the report in its entirety, and thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you. We appreciate it very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Jackie Peterson. I'm the executive director of the Portland Chinatown History Foundation. And I also want to thank all of you for the, I'll use again that word, robust preservation aspects in the 2035 plan. We appreciate it. I also, though, want to very much support all of the recommendations of the report today by Landmarks, and we really want to thank Landmarks for all of the effort that it has made and continues to make on behalf of the one historic district that we have in the city that does represent the history and the culture and the memories of one of Portland's major ethnic immigrant groups. I also want to say just a few words about the importance of updating the HRI. I mean, in listening to the commentary today, of which there was very little that I could disagree with, I want to sort of return to something that Commissioner Fish said about having lost our soul, or at least concerns about where we're going and how much has changed in 10 years. I think it would be really unfortunate to use, I mean, in any way, maybe even not consciously, what appears to be an emergency as a way to kind of junk or back away from policies that evolved over a very long time and very much was the signature of what Portland has been for more than 100 years. And I think we really need to think carefully about teasing out the very pieces of this emergency. I'm not sure that even pieces of this are incompatible, but there are parts of it that seem very volatile that do seem to be incompatible, and they seem to kind of reside under the guise of language which isn't strictly speaking a housing emergency. So I think that we one of the advantages to the HRI work seems to me to be renewing a conversation on the part of all Portlanders about what do we mean when we say we want to preserve the past, our neighborhoods. What does that mean? Does it mean, is it about architecture only? I mean, is it about the person who lived in that house and we value that person now, even though we've just learned of them and they represent a particular minority? You have to think about what is the context? What is the neighborhood? What is the fabric of that place that made that person's life worthwhile, what they gave back to the city? If we keep the house and destroy the neighborhood, what does that mean? So I think we need that conversation, this larger conversation, and I thank Landmarks, which seems to me right now to have a very extraordinary group of people serving the city in that capacity, and I hope you will give them greater agency and voice in your deliberations with the state. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, all three of you. Next three, please.
Are Steve Dottier, Stephanie Whitlock, and Julie Garver.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
We'll just keep it in the same order if you'd like to start.
All right. My name's Steve Dotterer. I'm the president of the board of the Architectural Heritage Center. As with many of the speakers, I'm here to support the report and its recommendations. I want to call out a couple of them specifically. One of them is the update to the zoning code to reflect the new Goal 5 administrative rules and the court cases, and also the need to fix some administrative matters. And I think with the new state administrative rule that clarifies what owner consent means for historic districts, that we can go back and have local historic districts, which we have not been able to have really since 1995. And if we have local districts, they're recommended by the Landmarks Commission and created by the council. And the council can consider all of the comp found goals when you make a decision about what to include in it. And you can also, you establish the process, the local public involvement process by which we get there. The districts that have been completed, that have been under debate and recently have all been going up for national register districts, and you've had essentially nothing to say about them, and you haven't been able to look at them from a comp plan perspective. That's not a good way to do long-range planning, and I think you now have an opportunity to fix that, and I would encourage you to keep focused on that into the future. Second, I want to support the continued conversation about what kind of incentives are valuable, and I think we should be looking at the zoning code, but the financial incentives are particularly critical. Want to thank the mayor for his support of the federal tax credits and hope that that support is successful because it's pretty important, as Peggy pointed out. I also want to note that most of the state financial incentives will expire in 2020 unless the legislature acts. And I suspect it's not appropriate to create them exactly the way they are today, and which, I will say, the council has no role in applying them directly, and I believe that it's appropriate again for the council to make the choices about the designation and whether a resource is worthy to get some of these tax abatements. And you know, you can consider whether you're achieving your URM goals and your affordable housing goals as well as your historic preservation goals when you give a tax abatement. The way it works now, you don't get a chance to say anything about that. So as I think as we look to the improving the legislation or trying to figure out new incentives for 2020, we should look at some way of doing that. And then finally, I want to support the HRI, the Historic Resources Inventory Update. Bill gave a lot of good reasons, and as a staff person who actually worked as a volunteer on the 1982 version, I think it's time to update it at this point. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, sir, for your testimony. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Stephanie Whitlock. I'm the Executive Director of the Architectural Heritage Center. I first wanted to start out by thanking our volunteer committee on the Historic Landmarks Commission for their time and their dedication to protecting Portland's significant places and for their work in preparing this important and thoughtful report on preservation that we heard today. Our organization, the Architectural Heritage Center, is honored to be included in the report as a preservation spotlight for the project we administered this year to research and document African-American properties in Portland. To give credit where credit is due, the project was carried out by a four-person team led by Kathy Galbraith, our founding director. Projects such as this one increased our knowledge and understanding of our community's built and cultural heritage, and they're really essential and empowering first steps to safeguarding these resources. So echoing other voices heard today, this is why the AHC strongly supports the Commission's longstanding call to update Portland's Historic Resources Inventory. The inventory is an important tool, and it's a public resource. It serves many purposes, as we've heard about in the report, from urban planning to environmental sustainability. And it also uncovers the rich diversity of our city. So like our team's work on African-American resources in Portland, the HRI captures places of social, cultural, and historical significance that might not otherwise be recognized as important, and it helps to broaden public understanding of preservation beyond architecture, architecture with capital A, and it really helps us all be more inclusive in our approach to cultural preservation. And as Mr. Willingham mentioned, today we have powerful new technologies available to us, not just to make the process more efficient and more sophisticated, but as Kirk said, just more participatory and more community building. The City of Los Angeles completed its inventory, and they did a terrific job with some great new open source software. I encourage you to check that out. BPS has invested in preliminary steps this year to update the inventory, as you know about, which is the great first steps, and we encourage you to continue to build on this momentum. We're encouraged by what we've heard today, so that's really terrific. Finally, as the year draws to a close, we just want to thank you all for your service to the city and your support of preservation.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Good afternoon. Mm-hmm.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. My name is Julie Garver, and I'm the Housing Development Director for Innovative Housing. I'm also a board member on Restore Oregon. And I'm here today to support the report and the work of the Commission and staff. It was very nicely done and great work over the year. Also, I want to be here to say historic preservation and affordable housing can go hand in hand. And there's been a lot of discussion about that. I've spent the last 13 years with Innovative Housing doing it. So we have done 7 historic building projects in Portland. 3 utilized federal historic tax credits. These buildings provide 339 affordable apartments for people and several commercial spaces within our city. The scope of our rehabilitation work has ranged from finishes and ADA work to gut rehabs and major seismic work. We've heard about the federal housing tax credits and that they are extremely vulnerable and in the tax plan discussions, and I wanted to express my appreciation for Mayor Wheeler making the protection of the federal HTC a top priority for city government relations team. So thank you for doing that, and encourage everybody in the room to express our own individual support of that program too. I wanted to also mention the State Historic Tax Credit. Peggy mentioned it a minute ago. We did a project called the Rich Building a few years ago, and it was on a shoestring budget, and we just pulled it off, but it was a small building. It had 34 units, and it was a really nice building in Old Town, but we couldn't use federal historic tax credits on it because it was just too small. It didn't have the historic basis that attracted investors to it, and so we couldn't use it. We could have used a state historic tax credit. And so for smaller properties especially, that tool would be really effective. Also echoing some other thoughts, I wanted to say that finding a source for funding seismic rehabilitations, I think, is going to be really important. And I know it's unpopular, but I'm going to make the pitch for some grants. And the reason is because of all the proformas that I've worked on for historic buildings. Loans are really difficult, especially when an owner already has a loan on a building. You just can't support more debt service oftentimes.
Well, let me just add one other point. In some of the buildings you've done that are in historic properties or unreinforced masonry buildings, the city financed those projects knowing that the buildings had issues. If we're going to come along 5-10 years later and set a mandate, and we're talking about a community asset that is affordable housing, social housing that is serving our lowest income residents, I think the city has to have some skin in the game. And I'm not shy about calling it a grant. I think it should be a grant. Because I know about your pro formas, and you can't get blood from a stone.
Well, and I think that's a great point, Commissioner Fish. And we looked at purchasing a privately owned historic building a few years ago that was on the market. They ultimately decided not to sell, but those apartments were really affordable. Their rents were $500 and $600 a month, and that was privately owned. You know, it didn't have any city money in it. And so there are private owners out there that could really benefit from the grants, because if they had to sell that building and do a big project and refinance it, guess what those rents would end up being after that project?
Yeah.
They would be $1,500 a month and not $500. And so the use of a grant tool for that seismic work would be really valuable. The last thing I wanted to close with is supporting what others have said about the creation of ADUs. I like one ADU or even two ADUs property in a basement, in a backyard effort, and the internal conversions. I have personally two ADU properties. They're both basement conversions, and they rent for $8.95 a month. And so that's affordable housing. The demolition that's happening in our neighborhoods, often what's replaced is, I think I saw 148% more costly than the property that was there. So I'd really encourage some incentives for that type of development, and a carrot and a stick approach. So carrot with the incentives, make the internal conversions and the ADUs easy to do, and also say, before you're going to demolish that property, you have to decide whether it's eligible for the historic register. And if it is eligible, then maybe you say that property can't be demolished.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Thanks, all three of you. I believe we have three more. Is that correct, Carla?
Yes.
Very good.
Fred Leeson, Jim Gardner, and Ian Johnson.
Good afternoon. Why don't you go ahead and start, sir?
Hello, my name is Ian Johnson. I'm the Associate Deputy State Historic Preservation Officer. The SHPO was invited here to speak, and so I'd like to say a few comments. We're very happy to be here to speak on behalf of the plan as presented to you, and to congratulate the city on all the good work it does in preserving some of the state's most important historic stories. The City of Portland is a participant in the Certified Local Government Program, which is a partnership between the National Park Service, our office, and the local government, being you this, in this case, which really helps incentivize and also enable local preservation efforts through technical service and pass-through funds. And what's really interesting about City of Portland is how the city has taken a very proactive approach, and I think how it's embodied is really in this report, specifically with the new Goal 5 rule, which now allows for properties to be inventoried without necessarily being designated. The city's effort with the historic resource inventory to go out and look at historic properties, evaluate what's important. And I think what's really a model in how it's been approached is thinking about, you know, geographic diversity, thematic diversity, looking at different types of resources, but also, and I was able to be part of some of those early meetings, talking about equity. How do we make sure that this is a process that benefits everyone? And I think that's really a great approach the city's taking, and one we're highly supportive of. It gets to that question of how do we figure out what to preserve and for what purposes and for whom, and I think that's an excellent thing. Ms. Whitlock talked a little bit about the African-American study that's being done, and that's a great example of the type of work that comes out of that very thoughtful approach. I think a real strength of the report, and especially the approach of the city, is the social consciousness in which historic preservation is addressed. Specifically, I think in this report, the question of unreinforced masonry buildings and affordable housing, you know, yes, these are preservation issues, and it's appropriate to think about and address them in that way. But as the discussion has gone on today, it's, you know, we all realize that there's broader concerns. And I think that this report and the Portland Landmarks Commission's approach to bringing all that in is very thoughtful, and certainly one to be commended and one we can support. We're also very happy to see the emphasis on education broadly, not just the history education, which you would think with historic preservation, but also why do this? Why expend public funds? Why is this something that a city should do? And also the thoughtfulness put into city regulations. What makes sense? How do you do that? So in total, we find this program to be a model for the state, that it really integrates a lot of different things, and it's the type of approach that we certainly encourage.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Jim Gardner. I'm the chairman of the Land Use Committee for the South Portland Neighborhood Association. And I'm here to, first of all, to express strong support for the historic preservation report that you received. And I'm especially grateful to the recent legislatures for giving you some better tools and better strategies for historic preservation. Actually, I'm here today to take the occasion to alert you to a problem that has very recently developed with the South Portland Historic District, which was actually one of Portland's very first historic districts. Way back in the late 70s, the neighborhood of Lair Hill particularly, which is part of what we're now calling South Portland, after being largely consumed by rampant urban renewal, worked with the city to establish the Lair Hill Historic Conservation District, which was a city-created historic district, one of the very first. Within a few years, working with the neighborhood, the city adopted a set of design guidelines that were being used to evaluate new construction and remodeling that might go on within the Lair Hill District. In the late 90s, we came to realize that we had only really preserved a portion of the historic South Portland. And so the neighbors working with the city went through the application process and accomplished creation of the South Portland National Historic District. At that time, we were told, and everyone within the city kind of assumed, that those design guidelines that had been created for the Lair Hill District would now apply to the larger, full South Portland District. That straddles NATO Parkway, essentially, Lair Hill being on the west side and the newer portion that was brought into the National District on the west side. Just in the last couple of weeks, BPS has told us that, no, those Lair Hill guidelines do not apply to that newer portion of the historic district that's on the east side of NATO. The reason is those original guidelines had a map, and the map outlined the Lair Hill portion. And so because of that, we're now being told that those guidelines no longer apply. Now, over the intervening 20 years, those guidelines have been used as approval criteria many times to evaluate projects on the east side of NATO. A little brief research that a BPS planner did found 23 land use cases, and 10 of those had used the Lair Hill guidelines as the approval criteria. We desperately need a new set of guidelines that will apply to the entire historic district. Whether that's simply expanding the boundary of the Lair Hill guidelines or whether that's starting over, either way, there needs to be some guidelines in place. And why the urgency? As you probably know, Metro is deeply into planning for the Southwest Corridor Light Rail Project. And regardless of whether Barber or NATO is chosen as the route, it goes through South Portland, and it will stimulate a significant amount of redevelopment, perhaps even far more if NATO is chosen, because there'll be a lot of new land available when the bridgehead spaghetti ramps are removed. Before that development gets on the drawing boards or into the pipeline, we certainly need to have in place a set of design guidelines that everyone can recognize applies to the entire historic district. The reason for this alert is that perhaps I hope in your budget deliberations or when you start putting together the budget, there will be a request for some staff help to accomplish this. And I wanted to let you know that this will be coming and to very much ask for your support for that.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it very much. Last but not least.
Yeah, good afternoon. Fred Leeson, past president, Architectural Heritage Center. As a little league ball player, I was good field, no hit. So batting cleanup is a little bit foreign for me here. This Landmarks Commission report is the latest in a long, long series of excellent, excellent reports, and it's kind of unfortunate to look back at the earlier ones and see how little has been accomplished of the recommendations they've suggested. This report gives a passing mention to the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources, and I thought I would talk about that a little bit. That was a brainchild of Jim Hoyer, who many of you remember, who realized that we really needed to get everybody in the preservation tent in an ad hoc group working together, the Heritage Center, Restore Oregon, United Neighborhoods for Reform, and all sorts of neighbors that live in historic districts, and anybody else who cared about the issue. Our big battle was at the legislature at House Bill 2017, where Speaker Kotek, the Builders Association, and Thousand Friends of Oregon absolutely tried to eviscerate historic districts and historic design review. To her discredit, Representative Kotek also designed a process that absolutely minimized our opportunities to testify. Nevertheless, we took every opportunity we could. We met weekly. We talked to legislators individually. We bombarded them with emails. We took trips to Salem whenever the two opportunities we could. And in the end, the legislature was quite stunned about the support for historic preservation, not only from Portland, but from Astoria and from Southern Oregon and from Eastern Oregon. And all the attacks on historic districts were flushed down the toilet. We fully expect that they will come back, but they know, I hope, when they do come back, they're in for a fight. I think there is a growing awareness in the city of Portland and around the state about the value of trying to protect our historic resources and the resources that give us a sense of place and make us difference. And we hope that the council will help us with that in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks, all three of you.
Mayor, I move the report.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Fish, a second from Commissioner Fritz. Any further discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Udaly?
Well, I think we've already lost a couple of our commissioners, and I know that we already did a speedy recognition, but I do want to take another moment to thank the dedicated volunteers who serve on the commission. This commission meets at least twice a month, often for many hours, as they review land use cases and provide advice. They are a hard-working group that include, and if I call your name and you're in the room, please stand up, Kirk Ranzetta, Chair, Kristen Miner, our Vice Chair, don't just stay standing. Matthew Roman, Wendy Chung, Annie Mahoney, Maya Foti, and Karen Carlson, who has already left and was already mentioned, is completing 8 years of service tomorrow. I thank you for your service, and if we could suspend the rules, I think another round of applause is in order. And I would also like to recognize the dedicated BDS staff who have been increasing in number due to the high volume of applications BDS receives related to historic resources. I'm really looking forward to continuing this conversation, and I'm happy to vote aye.
Fritz.
Thank you very much for all your work. This is a great report. I was very happy to see in it that the moving of the Morris Marks House came top of the accomplishments. And I want to, again, thank Rachel Wiggins and Mayor Hales' office, as well as practically everybody in mine who worked so hard to get that done. I also think fondly each time we get this report of Art DeMuro and Venerable Properties and the amazing leadership that he showed over the years, which is now evident in the places that we still can love and cherish. And as I said before, I don't think it's an either or. We can do it all. I was married in a church that was built in 1130. In fact, there are trees in England that are like 1,000 years old. They're kind of held together with wire, but they're still there. And so we can do this stuff. It's important to make that sense of place, because America, being a youngish country in terms of their current population, and then the heritage that we inherit from the indigenous people here, whose sacred and wonderful spaces were outside rather than being buildings, we can combine all of that with looking after what we've been given and the stewardship that we're required for it. So thank you very much, all of you, for your work. Aye.
Fish.
Well, I want to thank everybody that contributed to this report. I don't think there was a dissenting voice on updating the 1984 Historic Resources Inventory. And I was relieved to learn that the original one was done by a group of volunteers, so it's not going to have a great budget impact, Mayor.
They had the foresight to identify themselves here publicly by name, so I look forward to the same good deal.
Really appreciate the volunteer members of the commission and the time they've taken to engage us. I thought this was an unusually thoughtful presentation, good dialogue. There's a recurring theme that some people feel that we have these forums, these hearings, and then nothing happens. I hope that's not the case next year, because I think you've clearly identified a number of things at the federal, state, and local level that we can do. And I also appreciate that in this time when it's increasingly hard to celebrate any of the wins, it's just the times we live in. Everybody thinks that there's, you know, this sort of prevailing attitude is walking through the emergency room, you know, chronicling the carnage. So it displaces the time to actually acknowledge the wins. And there's some people in this room to whom we owe a great debt of gratitude for some huge wins this year. And they were unlikely wins. And everything from Morris Marks House to Jansen Beach Carousel to other things that are located, that are identified here, would not have happened without community members that really extended themselves. So very appreciative of that. I do think the history of a city through its structures and its buildings and other things is very important to preserve. And I just want to close by saying that I'm not sure how we reconcile all the things that the mayor identified earlier, but I don't think it was meant to be easy. And I think the challenge is to make sure that every time we go through this exercise, we bring all these values into the equation and balance them. Because I fear what we're going to do is start shortcutting and just bypassing certain things. And that would be a shame. So thank you for your good work. Aye.
Wheeler.
Well, first of all, I want to also take some time to thank the volunteer members of our commission. 26 meetings in 1 year for volunteers. That's significant in terms of the commitment. So thanks to all of you who are doing that. This is obviously a time of significant change around historic preservation. The staff of BPS worked with many of you in this room to go down to Salem and lobby for some, I'll call it relaxation of administrative rules that were standing in the way of our historic preservation efforts. And I know that we're working collectively to figure out how to use that newfound flexibility to everybody's advantage. And I certainly look forward to seeing the Historic Resources Code project come back to the City Council in 2018, and I look forward to supporting that work as I support the work that we're talking about here today. And I want to say again publicly that I do support the revisiting of the historic resource inventory. I think it's essential that we update this document. It's been far too long since we last addressed it, so I look forward to working with the BPS leadership to talk about how we can get the resources to work on that collectively. And I want to thank all of you in advance for volunteering to help us do that important work in the days, months, and years ahead. So thank you. I vote aye. Great report. We are recessed until 4 p.m. Thank you.